Radio. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Call us at any point throughout the show, 651-989-5855. You can drop me an email, justice@iHeartMedia.com. And, of course, leave us a message via the TalkBack on the iHeart Radio app. Maybe you're listening on your smart speakers at home. Before we talk with our D.C. correspondent, Andrew Langer, a couple of items from Robbie's Rundown last hour, which you can catch up with on the podcast on the iHeart Radio app. A study said, well, this is out of your rundown. I added this one in. But a study said it takes 3 days for individuals to start enjoying their vacation. Also, overnight, it was revealed that Bob Chapek out failing as the head of the Disney Corporation, and Bob Iger is back. This is what happens in the private sector. You lose a little bit of money, you make changes. I wished it happened in politics a lot faster.
Good morning, you guys. Dennis Prager recently had some thoughts on vacations, and he takes a vacation every day, as in he sets aside about, I think he said 40-ish minutes to just unwind and do what he enjoys doing as Dennis. And I totally live by that philosophy. Right, you guys have a good morning.
Good morning, guys. Regarding Robbie's story about the new old CEO at Disney, I read a story about this morning, and part of the problem was the fact that the new CEO refused to take a stand on Florida politics. So I think it's fascinating that we're playing the blame game with CEOs when Disney doesn't seem to want to be introspective and consider whether its woke policies are leading to their partial demise. Thanks.
Was he implying there? I'll bring our DC correspondent on, Andrew Langer, president of the Institute for Liberty, radio and a podcast host. Was Tom implying there that Chapek didn't address the politics and that's why? And Iger would. Was that Robbie? Was that what you took?
That's kind of what I inferred. Yeah, but maybe Andrew has a different
take. Know. Andrew Langer, what do you? Because I kind of disagree with that. What is your sort of quick take on Iger taking over?
I mean, listen. And there are these rumblings that he didn't stand up for Disney enough in this whole kerfuffle with DeSantis. Listen. In the end, right? Disney is facing massive amounts of problems, and they're solving the problems by trying to solve it by upping the ticket price and making it more restrictive. And it's going to have the result of making, Disney a playground of the elites in a way that Walt Disney himself never intended.
Well, there's a middle ground there. First off, on Chapek and Florida, I actually thought that Chapek was, kind of out of the gate had responded appropriately. He was kind of taking a hands-off approach on this, and then he caved to the pressure, which I think did not help him at all. I thought his stance initially was pretty solid in the way that he had worded his initial statement, and then once the minority and size sort of mob got involved, he had to go and cave to it. It's interesting though, you made the other comment, because I was reading a subsequent story completely apart from this, and again, it sort of all plays into this change, but they were talking about the exorbitant and ticket prices and the number of hours on a daily basis their major attractions within the theme parks were breaking down. And it really speaks to sort of a diminishing quality of product, and that's also been seen in some of what they've been releasing on the Disney Plus app. Again, Andrew Langer, my bigger takeaway on this is that, I wish politics moved as swiftly as the private sector did, because this is what happens in the private sector. You have somebody at the helm and they're not failing. You bring back the successful people and you begin to make changes to right the ship, but we can't move that fast in politics.
Well, not only can we not move that fast, I mean, this is, again, if you're allowing the wrong ideas to move forward, and you're sort of beholden to beliefs that sort of don't match the reality that's out there, then you're never going to get these changes. I sent you the story this morning. This is what the RNC is going to be grappling with. We have three now successive cycles of politics in which Republicans have not achieved what we had hoped that they were going to achieve, and yet Ronald Romney McDaniel is still the chairman of the RNC. There is a movement underfoot. Lee Zeldin, the congressman, former congressman, almost successful candidate for governor in New York, had been making rumblings that he's gonna run for RNC chair. And now there's a story out there that Ronna Romney McDaniel may have the votes to retain her seat. And I'm trying to figure out by what measure are these RNC national committee men and national committee women, willing to retain her as RNC chair. I don't understand this.
Well, and this is one of those mornings where there is an emerging narrative that's kind of popping up, and it spreads from different topics throughout the show. And so it applies to this here in the 8 o'clock hour. I'll get into a bit of this. There was two articles that were written. One was a lengthy piece about the DFL organization, Alliance for a Better Minnesota. Basically the machine behind the DFL here in Minnesota, and just how successful they've been and how that was born out of a time when they actually suffered some losses, I think going back to 2000 and 2006. There's another piece that I'll couple with it, talking just about how the GOP, people within the GOP are looking to change direction. But to what you're talking about here with Ronna McDaniel is there seems to be, and again, and please, if you disagree, I know you'll share that thought, but there seems to be sort of, for lack of a better word, I'll describe it as aggression. There seems to be a lack of sort of aggression and motivation to make any big changes with individuals within the party of, oh, they're doing okay. Oh, she's done a really good job, even though we haven't won here. We had a similar thing happen, and I'll get into that later on here with our own, Minnesota GOP party and having to oust the chair because of controversies. But it seems as if the Republican Party in and of itself, while individuals are motivated and aggressive, the party in and of itself isn't as aggressive as the left, and we're losing because of it.
Well, I think that's true. I think, especially if you look at the way fights have gone over the longest period of time, we've lost a lot of policy battles. In fact, my colleague at Andrew and Jerry Save the World, Jerry Rogers, who's the editor of Real Clear Policy, Jerry thinks Republicans have just lost altogether. I mean, he's ready to hang it up. He's ready to go pack it all up and move to Ireland and work in a pub in Ireland, or own a pub in Ireland. I think we have lost certain fights. I think there are other battles that we have won or are winning, over the long term. And some of it has to do with the issue of aggressiveness, or a lot of it has to do with recognizing that this is what is going to happen down the road. It's one of those things where we talk about, for instance, gay marriage. And, by and large, and I'm someone who's in favor of gay marriage. I'm someone who, especially if government is going to be involved in sanctioning marriage, I'm not sure the government really needs to be, but set that all aside for a moment. Years ago, Jerry said to me, and I will never forget this, we're walking through D.C., and he says, Andrew, it's not about gay marriage. I believe that, if you two adults, should be able to get married if they want to and do all of those things that married, heterosexual married couples should do. But the issue really is about pushing back and making it so that you have to, you not only have to accept it, but in every circumstance, you have to applaud it. And they're going to use the force of law to make you get involved in these things. And I said, Jerry said, no, that's never going to happen. And it turns out Jerry was right, right? And we now have this situation. We have what's happening in Congress with the Respect for Marriage Act. We had what happened in Colorado and elsewhere with, people being, sued over not wanting to offer up their goods and services for gay weddings. And Jerry was right in that regard. And so part of it is not recognizing what is happening and fighting back, recognizing what the end result is going to be and fighting back. The other factor in all of this, and this is general in the population when it comes to politics, is that, and this is why we have had such incumbent protection in the midterm elections, why we've always had such incumbent protection, because while you may think that the country is on the wrong direction in the aggregate or a situation is in the wrong direction in the aggregate, you almost never blame your guy or your gal. Right. Oh, well, it's the 434 other members of Congress that are the problem. It's not my guy necessarily. And in rare occasions, you have a challenger who is able to overcome that and demonstrate why the incumbent should be tossed out. But you get that situation. You get the situation in which, folks are always willing to prefer the devil they know versus the devil they don't know. And so, right, and then we have this kind of, I'm going to say it, mass insanity, which is, you know, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And that's, you know, it certainly seems we're in that morass right now.
Yeah, I don't quite understand the, because I've heard from a handful of listeners feeling the same way as it relates to the Republican Party, and I'm done, and okay, that's fine. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. I don't know where you're going to go at this point in time. And if that's the case, then I guess you are willing to, I would assume you'd be willing to suffer more, you know, more losses in the wake of rebuilding something new, because there isn't something else out there to replace it at this point in time. So, you know,
and there never is. I mean, usually the way it's supposed to work, and it works, and sometimes it doesn't work, is that you get folks. See, here's the problem, right? Politics is hard, right? Politics is hard, policy is hard, and you have folks who just don't want to put in the work. B, you know, when you are exposing yourself in the way that we now have with the blood sport of politics, you know, you get folks who are good, thoughtful folks who don't want to get involved and don't want to put in the work because of the exposure. One little misstep that somebody makes, and all of a sudden, you know, the other side is out screaming for blood. So you have those factors that are going on. And then what's left is you get sort of, you get folks who are marginal personality types who get involved in politics. And again, this is on both sides of the aisle, or you get the grifter class that moves in because they can make a buck off of it. And because, you know, these are folks who are not interested in doing the hard work over the long term for the betterment of the party, very little changes. Now, you get stuff that can move over time. So, you know, the Tea Party activists of 2009, some of them got involved, some of them were good people, some of them stayed with, you know, party activism. And then if they stayed with it, some of them made changes. But then, again, because politics is hard, some of them got captured by the system. and so you get that, issue that goes on. And, you know, it's interesting because, and I point folks in the direction of one of my great mentors, a political science professor named Ron Rappaport at William & Mary, who has done research into and polling of third-party movements over time. And the problem, of course, with third-party movements is that they operate sort of outside of the two-party dichotomy. And so unless they get involved in the major parties, they tend to have an influence of they can put pressure and they can move things on the margins, but it's not direct. But you see that a lot of these third-party activists tend to be the same people over time. So people who might have been involved in the reform movement in the 90s, then became Tea Party activists in the 2000s and 2010s, and I'm sure a lot of them are involved in the MAGA movement now. And we're talking activists. I'm not talking, again, about leaders or grifters. I mean, it's you know, sort of the rank-and-file folks. And these are – but, again, it's you know, they're just trying to nudge, which is a whole other aspect of all of this.
Let's switch gears. Criticism of the House oversight hearings into Joe and Hunter Biden versus moving swiftly to bring down inflation. Who's stepping forward and criticizing the potential of the investigations into Joe and Hunter Biden?
I mean, this is all coming from the left, right? I mean, this was sort of the immediate reaction of the snarky, you know, leftist press, especially in social media after, you know, the first investigations were announced. But this is a problem, right? You know, you are damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. The reality is that Republicans in the House have very limited power in how they influence politics. You know, short of throwing up their hands and saying, no, we're all going to declare ourselves to be socialists moving forward, and we're going to embrace the AOCs of the world. There's sort of a limited amount of an impact they can have legislatively. Now, they can propose legislation. It will pass the House, and then it will go to the Senate to die, and certainly not be signed by the President of the United States. But one thing they do have, the one thing they do have power over is investigations and oversight. I mean, let me set those two things apart. I mean, there's the investigatory arm, but then there is also the very real and important aspect of making sure that the agencies themselves are doing their jobs, which is, you know, of vital importance. And this is interesting because it gets back to what we were just talking about. This is where Republicans absolutely need to be not just aggressive, But they need to be transparent, and they need to explain in granular detail what they're doing and why.
Yeah.
You know, here's why we're looking at Hunter Biden's laptop. Or here's why we're looking at the relationship between the White House and the Department of the Interior and the Department of Energy over what's going on with drilling. Here's what we're doing in terms of the EPA and climate change. Here's what we're looking at in terms of the relationship between the Democrats and the Federal Trade Commission and Sam Bankman-Fried. You know, let's get to the heart of why Maxine Waters was blowing kisses at this crook. Alleged crook, I'm sorry. Don't want to get into trouble. You know, then again, Sam Bankman-Fried has no money, so what's he going to do? Is he going to sue me? Good luck with that. But the point is, it's a situation in which the only real power that Republicans have, and this gets into things like inflation, is to be able to look at the relationship between the Biden administration's first 2 years of public policy.
Yeah.
And how they have driven up prices for consumers, or driven up inflation generally, and we have to be really clear about this when people sort of say, "Oh, well, you know, hey, we've got runaway inflation, and the Republicans are doing nothing." No, Republicans are doing what the only thing that they really can do, which is to figure out what the heck the Biden administration is doing that is so wrong.
Yeah.
And to make the case to the American public as to how it needs to be corrected going into 2024.
I'm going to get into a little bit more of that coming up in just a moment. But Andrew Langer, thank you for the time of this morning. What can people expect from the latest Andrew and Jerry Save the World podcast?
Well, listen, it was a great episode last week. We talked about what went wrong with the 2022 elections. You're going to want to tune into that. It was a great bit. As to what we can do. Great lunch hour podcast last week. Stephen Yates from the America First Policy Institute talking about China. This week, Paul Teller. And Jerry and I are going to do our big Thanksgiving episode this week, so check it out.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and hopefully we'll talk to you after the holiday. And again, thank you for the time this morning, sir. Always great talking with you.
Talk to you later. Bye. Happy Thanksgiving.
Coming up. Kevin McCarthy versus Representative Ilhan Omar. It's not a lot, but I'll take it. Also, Keith Ellison says alternate meals for students with debt violates the ban on lunch shaming. It's all coming up on Twin Cities News Talk. Twin Cities News Talk, where you have an opportunity to win Vikings tickets to the highly coveted Thanksgiving night game at U.S. Bank Stadium against the Patriots. Let's hope that they got the losing out of their system. Because that was not fun by any stretch of the imagination. Be listening for your chance to call in and pick those up coming up. Hopefully right around, or actually probably right around 8 o'clock this morning. Dovetailing off of Andrew Langer's, the conversation we had with Andrew Langer, the president of the Institute for Liberty, over the left and their consternation that the House Oversight Committee was going to launch hearings into Hunter Biden, and more specifically Joe Biden, over tackling inflation. First off, Andrew Langer obviously pointed out the obvious, that the GOP is going to be limited in their majority in the House to do anything comprehensive, with the Senate makeup being what it is, and more specifically Joe Biden sitting in the White House. However, the move by the House Oversight Committee with a potential investigation into Joe Biden, I think actually could, over the long term, help to deal with the inflation issue. Specifically, one of the items that was brought up was something that I was not aware of. This is Representative Comer in Jordan when they made their surprise announcement last week on Thursday. And this was something that I was not aware of in all of the reporting that had been done about Hunter Biden's laptop issue and Joe Biden. In the wake of 9/11, rules were changed in order to track money laundering. This was done because of the amount of money that the 9/11 terrorists were able to move around. So there were rules that were put in place under Bush to be able to track this. These were rules that remained in place while Obama was in office, remained in place while Trump were in office, and then suddenly, the moment that Biden got in office, he went and changed the rules so that was no longer above board, taking away the ability to go and make investigations into this particular type of money laundering, to the point that Maxine Waters herself actually tried to include in a bill putting the rule back in place to allow this investigation, these investigations, obviously unaware that Joe Biden probably had specifically gone and done that for a reason. Now, we don't know the reason why, but one can extrapolate as it relates to Hunter Biden and his business dealings overseas that potentially Joe Biden didn't want any investigations launched that could reveal the money moving and changing hands between Hunter Biden and perhaps even Joe Biden himself. Now, how does this relate to bringing down inflation? Because holding Biden accountable could potentially go and strip him of some of his power, especially if we're able to remove him from office if he ends up running in 2024. If anything, it also provides the opportunity to go and expose what many of us believe is corruption behind the Bidens in general. And I don't take a lot of criticism coming from the left with any sort of relevancy as it relates to what the GOP in the House should or shouldn't be doing. Speaking of which, Kevin McCarthy says he will move to remove Ilhan Omar from a committee assignment. We'll give you details on that. And why Keith Ellison is saying that alternate meals for students with debt violations is a violation of the ban on lunch shaming. We'll give you details on this. Your talk back's coming up on Twin Cities News Talk. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. On your smart speakers at home, 103.5 FM as well. Leave us a talk back via the iHeartRadio app as I rustle through my papers. Next hour, a Trafalgar strategist explains election misses after red wave fails to materialize. And so we'll dive into that story. Plus, in a moment, Kevin McCarthy says he will remove Ilhan Omar from committee assignment. We'll give you the reason why in just a second. I do believe we have some talkbacks to share with you, though.
I think we need to start rallying behind Trump and our Republican people that we do have on our side. If we get behind them, then everyone will follow. We can't lose them.
It's called election fraud. Nothing more, nothing less. Quit the excuses and quit insulting us.
All right. To both of those. On the first individual, as it relates to Trump, I was thinking about this, didn't have a chance to get into it in the conversation that we had with Andrew Langer. There was a story about how there were three key former Trump donors that were not getting behind Trump, at least not as of yet, in the wake of his announcement last week. Also, a shift in tone from potential 2024 candidates who, again, were behind Trump prior, but now, as they may be running, aren't anymore. But to the conversation that we got into with Andrew Langer and something that we'll dive into next hour, whoever challenges Trump, because that's what it's going to be, a challenge to Trump getting the nomination. He obviously is the front runner at this point in time. The number of individuals that immediately went to follow him on Twitter, anecdotal as it is when Twitter reinstated him over the weekend, is still significant anecdotal evidence of the amount of support that Trump still has among a large group of Republicans. And it is in large part to what I was talking about with Andrew Langer, and that is the need that the GOP, or let me rephrase that, the desire that I personally have for the GOP to get more aggressive as it relates to campaigning, organizing better, treating it more as a war. This was stemming from the conversation that we had about the potential of leaving RNC chair Ronna McDaniel in place, even though, you know, she's really kind of suffered a number of losses under her watch. There tends to be an attitude of, oh, but she's doing a good job and the mechanism, you know, all the people are in place, so we don't want to go and change. It's like, no, we need to get aggressive on this. We need to be more like Disney removing JPEG and bringing Bob Iger back in to go and right the ship. All that is to say that if anybody wants to be a challenger to Trump for the nomination, they're going to have to show that type of aggressiveness. Because that's one of the big motivating factors behind individuals that support Donald Trump. They know he's not going to go and back down. They know that he's going to speak his mind, whether the left likes it or not. So if it's DeSantis or somebody else, they're going to have to try to figure out a way that they're going to counter that. If they want to gain enough support to beat Trump in a primary. Thankfully, as I mentioned last week, we have a lot of time to go and figure this out. To the woman that called about the election fraud. Okay. I value your opinion, but again, unless we have two things. One, the evidence of that. But before that, we have individuals in place to go and move forward with investigations to prove that election fraud that you believe in. The issue is not going to yield any results. Here's a perfect example. Arizona's attorney general, while our attorney general is worried about lunch shaming, Arizona's attorney general's office ordered Maricopa County officials to submit a report on its botched handling of the November 8th election that led to Democratic gubernatorial candidate Katie Hobbs' apparent victory over Republican Carrie Lake, saying answers are needed before the election can be certified. In a letter from the Election Integrity Unit of the Attorney General Mark Brodovich's office, the top officials cited evidence of statutory violations in the contest, in which Hobbs, who as Secretary of State, oversees elections, overcame huge deficits in the polls and there were widespread malfunctions of voting machines in conservative areas of the state's most populous county, which became a national punchline as it took more than a week to tally votes. These complaints go beyond pure speculation, but include firsthand witness accounts that raise concerns regarding Maricopa's lawful compliance with Arizona election law, wrote Assistant Attorney General Jennifer Wright in a Saturday letter to the county's Chief Civil Division Attorney Thomas Lindy. Wright requested a full report on how tabulator and printer malfunctions at some 60 Maricopa voting locations were addressed on Election Day, as well as a copy of each voting location's official ballot report, including any discrepancies and explanations. The machines were tested the day before the election, and no problems were detected, Wright's letter noted. Wright's letter cited potential legal violations in the way poll workers handled ballots that could not be ingested into tabulators. Maricopa County appears to have failed to adhere to the statutory guidelines in segregating, counting, tabulating, tallying, and transporting door 3 ballots. Wright cited a sworn statement from one election observer who said those non-tabulated votes were placed in duffel bags and possibly co-mingled with tabulated votes. Now, the state has not yet officially certified a winner, though it's supposed to occur at the beginning of next month. Wright said Arizonans deserve a full report and accounting of the myriad of problems that occurred in relation to Maricopa County's administration of the 2022 general election. As the canvas is looming and these issues relate to Maricopa's ability to lawfully certify election results, the unit requests a response to aforementioned issues on or before Maricopa County submits its official canvas to the Secretary of State, which must occur before November 28, 2022. So look, for everyone's concern, for everyone concerned and rightfully so about election integrity, this is how it's done. We've got to elect people that share our concern about voting irregularities. We'll get into more of this coming up next hour, but to the talkbacker, I respect the fact that you're frustrated, but this quit making excuses. If there's no evidence to back any of it up, it's pure speculation and conjecture. So where are we supposed to go with that? Who are you going to hand it to go and do the investigative work? Certainly not here in Minnesota. There's nobody in a position of power. So ultimately, what we need to focus on continually is making sure that we elect individuals who are put in a position of power to actually go and do the investigating and to change the way the election process works so we don't have these types of irregularities and questions being brought about every time we have an election.
And with questions on the last two elections, do you think that it's going to decrease or increase kind of the fervor around the election fraud claims as we head into 2024 with Trump obviously on the main stage as one of the main players in the Republican primary?
Well, going back to 2020?
Yeah, but even before that, like when Hillary said that, you know, the election was stolen from her.
Right.
And you know what I mean? So, I mean, is it do you think that we're going to have more of that in a couple of years?
More of what specifically? I guess more of
election fraud claims from either side. Well, whoever loses.
We're already seeing that. We're already seeing that in this election cycle. But if we're ever going to be able to bring about any sense of security in our elections and integrity, you've got to put people in positions of power to go and investigate. And again, that's the process. You have an attorney general in Arizona that's concerned about this, so they're going and looking into it. You're not going to see that happen here. So you can complain all you want. You know, you've got your right to do that. You can present all of your speculation and graphs and charts and leave a talk back or frustrate and say you're making up excuses. But I can sit here on the show and say, it was election fraud. It was election fraud as the day is long. But where does that end up getting us? I don't have any evidence apart from, again, speculation and conjecture to point to that, and there's not an apparatus in play that's going to go and look into what people think that they are seeing with the amount of information that's coming in from this past election.
Remember, it was 10 or 15 years ago when they came out with the Mitchell Report for baseball, when they hired a special investigator, George Mitchell, to kind of investigate all the steroid use that was rampant around baseball. And they basically came back with a whole lot of nothing, and a lot of it was redacted, and a lot of names that were in there that they kind of had a gag order and then a couple of names leaked out and stuff. It's very similar to that, and then it's just a whole lot of nothing. And they you're right, they do need to hire somebody who needs to know what they're doing and obviously have a plan.
Well, and at the end of the day, I don't think that the election fraud claims are ever going to yield the proper results. I think the solution at the end of the day is tightening up the way that we vote. COVID turned our election, and we'll get into more of this, COVID turned our election process on its head. And the left has been able to capitalize on that. It's a big reason why the GOP wasn't able to make further gains this past election, among a myriad of reasons. But you don't have enough individuals in positions of power to look at these voting irregularities to go and make a difference. Now, again, we may see that in Arizona. They may actually go and discover something. But there are people in Arizona that will go back and say, hey, we discovered A, B, C, and D as it relates to 2022, but that didn't change anything. They didn't change the process in Maricopa County. I know it's frustrating. I don't have the answers here. But I think that ultimately what it comes down to is that we got to start winning elections to get the process, to shore up the process and add some security to it. If you don't like ballots being harvested where it's legal in certain states, then those states need to make sure they elect individuals to their own state legislatures to go and change that process. But until that happens, this is going to continue. And while it continues, the GOP needs to learn how to go and capitalize on it. Elections do have consequences, and here's an example of that. It's not much, but I'll take it. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy said on Saturday that when he is Speaker of the House next year, he plans to remove Democrat Representative Ilhan Omar from the House Foreign Affairs Committee over her anti-Semitic comments. We watch anti-Semitism grow, not just our campuses, but we watched it grow in the halls of Congress. He said at the Republican Jewish Coalition's 2022 leadership meeting in Las Vegas, I promised you last year that as speaker, she will no longer be on foreign affairs, and I'm keeping that promise. Since being elected in 2018, Omar has made, as you may well know, several controversial comments widely deemed to perpetuate anti-Semitic tropes, including saying that it was all about the Benjamins for the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, and tweeting that we have seen unthinkable atrocities committed by the U.S., Hamas, Israel, Afghanistan, and the Taliban, which was seen as equating Israel and the U.S. to the Taliban. In a tweet before joining Congress, the Democrat claimed that Israel had hypnotized the world, and after being elected, she submitted a resolution to the House comparing the boycotting Israel to boycotting the Nazis. Again, it isn't much, but I'll take it. And the truth of the matter is, Ilhan has, only been in Congress to serve herself and to conduct her activism. And that's it. In the meantime, schools that offer an alternate meal, such as a cold cheese sandwich, to students with lunch debt, are apparently violating state law. This is according to an opinion issued Thursday by Attorney General Keith Ellison. So while, again, we have attorney generals in Arizona looking into election integrity, our attorney general is worried about the school lunches. Education Commissioner Heather Mueller requested the opinion, writing that some school districts in the state still deny students meals off the standard menu until their families' debts are paid, even after the legislature passed a law last year banning lunch shaming. I was not aware of the lunch shaming, and by the look on producer Robbie's face, neither was he. So one section of the relevant statute says schools must ensure that any reminders for payment of outstanding student meal balances do not demean or stigmatize any child participating in the school lunch program, including but not limited to dumping meals, withdrawing a meal that has been served, announcing or listing students' names publicly, or affixing stickers, stamps, or pins. Ellison wrote that it's not clear whether an alternative meal, and again, so kids were being offered a cold cheese sandwich as opposed to the standard meal off the menu because they hadn't paid their student lunch debt yet. Ellison wrote it's not clear whether the alternative meal would demean or stigmatize in violation of that part of the law. Whether it does or does not is the education commissioner's to make. First off, I think that demonstrates alone how ridiculous and more specifically broad this statute actually is. The same statute also prohibits schools. I had no idea this even existed. Prohibits schools from limiting student participation in any school activities, graduation ceremonies, field trips, athletics, activity clubs, or other extracurricular activities, or access to materials, technology, or other items provided to students due to an unpaid student balance. Ellison wrote that denying access to school's scheduled meal would actually violate the section of the law. I'll give you a few more details on this, but this really does highlight the left's mantra. And it's been actually working for them. So this idea of a life without consequences, as long as you keep voting in Democrats. But you know as well as I do that a life without consequences only leads to chaos and promotes irresponsible behavior. But the left seems to like to run on that because, unfortunately, their side ends up winning a lot of elections that way. More details on this story. Plus, we will dive into, again, sort of the state of the GOP here in Minnesota, starting off with the Trafalgar strategist explaining the election misses after the red wave failed to materialize, and the Democrat group that is instrumental in the party's winning streak here in Minnesota. It's all coming up on Twin Cities News Talk.